Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. Welcome to this edition of Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer, and joining me today is Reverend Mark.
Greetings, everybody.
And Bishop Ben.
Greetings and blessings to all.
And Father Matt Schnabel.
Hello, everyone.
And we're so glad to have this wonderful panel of scholars and biblical historians and theologians and to discuss.
And folks that try their best. That would be me.
Exactly.
That's all of us. We're just trying our best. So today we're going to be talking about interfaith dialogue and why it matters. You know, we live in such a diverse society that I think a lot of people forget that Christianity isn't the only faith in the world. And so because of that, they, tend to believe that everyone else's religion is false or everyone else is misled or misguided or at worst going to hell because, you know, they're of a different faith. And so in a world that's already so filled with hate, we don't need one more thing to be hateful about. So we want to kind of look at interfaith dialogue and its importance today, why it matters to have an open dialogue with other people of faith, and why it's important to see, all people as children of God in our society. And so I want to start off with I want to share a little bit of a story of my own, and then I'll open it up for the rest of the panel. But one of my great moments of interfaith cooperation, I've had many of them over the years, is probably been the Martin Luther King Jr. service that the Progressive Religious Coalition of Augusta holds every year, where they bring in people from all different faith communities to speak against racism and bigotry and hatred in our nation, and in the footsteps of Martin Luther King Jr., and trying to, you know, remind people that his message is still important even today. And so that is one of the great moments of interfaith cooperation and dialogue that I've been able to be a part of in my time of ministry. Would someone else like to share an experience that they've had in interfaith ministry?
Well, along those lines, I also participate in that particular service that Bishop's referencing. And from my background, raised in charismatic Pentecostal Christian circles, particularly in the Pentecostal mindset, there was not a lot of interfaith and cross-faith communication, especially with other religions and faiths. We didn't even do it within our own circle of other quote-unquote Pentecostal churches. So when I was seated a couple of years ago, we did this thing where they would have all the ministers sit up on the stage, all the faiths, that is, excuse me, sit up on the stage in a semicircle around the guest speaker. I was just blown away that I was honored and had the privilege to sit among so many different people that are reaching for peace and harmony in the world and the community. And to me, if we can start there, we can have a good cooperation. And it tells me that there's hope. And it tells me that there's a possibility that we might all get through some of these things that we're facing today. But the fact that I was able to sit and be among those individuals was such an amazing experience for me, because, like I said, we didn't even cross the street to talk to people that semi-believed the same way we did when I was growing up, let alone folks that had some vastly different takes on faith. So it gives me hope every time that I see that, and that at least the cooperation towards peaceful coexistence is out there for us.
Right. Excellent. Bishop Ben or Father Matt?
For me, I think a pivotal ecumenical service that I'm a part of down here in Florida is the Interfaith Pride Service and the Interfaith Thanksgiving services that the local MCC puts on. It's important because we not only mostly for pride, to show that all of the faiths that are represented there come together and offer a good home for people that are LGBT and are looking for a place to practice their individual spirituality. So,
excellent. Bishop Ben?
Well, ever since I moved to Houston, I have been wrapped up in the LGBTQ Rainbow Pride services here. And they usually invite me once a year to do the coalition meeting with them with the interfaith community, which I enjoy. I enjoy being part of the community and helping out and being a trusted ally with them. I think it's very good that we all have interfaith dialogue, because it shows that interfaith community care can be a good thing between religions and denominations.
Right. So what do we mean when we are discussing interfaith dialogue? One of the things that we mean by that is not debating people's faith, but rather an open and respectful conversation between people of different religious traditions. It's meant to be an opportunity for us to learn about their faith and their spiritual practices, and for us to maybe share the same type of experiences from our own personal point of view, rather than trying to condemn or proselytize. And what I mean by proselytize, trying to force people to change their faith. You know, when you stop and listen respectfully to other people's religious beliefs, you may find that there's far less of a difference between you than you really thought there was. You know, because in reality, we all believe pretty much the same general ideas, just with little different touches on it, you know. And it's important to remember that these things matter, because it helps to reduce prejudice and stereotypes while fostering understanding and empathy, you know. And in those experiences, one of the things that I'm reminded of are things like a few years ago, we saw a hate crime right here in our community where the UU church was attacked with swastikas painted on the sides and stuff like that. And the community came out and helped clean up and restore everything, regardless of who they were. It didn't matter if they were part of the Unitarian Universalist Church, or if they were part of a Baptist church across the street. They came out to help. And that's just one example of those types of things, especially in our community.
Yeah, and similar to that, MCC faced a hate crime back in about 2015-16. We ourselves, someone took white spray paint across the front of our building and spray painted Leviticus 19.
Right.
Trying to reference one of the clobber passages. They got the verse wrong, but that's fine. And I think they wrote underneath it lies or something like that, sinners, going to hell, whatever it was. And we had people, the MCC building here in Augusta is right across from the municipal building. And our building was built in 1887. So it's old and it's part of a historical society. So just the fact that somebody painted on that beautiful brick from well over 100+ years ago was very sad. But we had people from across the street. We had various faiths come. We held a service that evening, and we had people from every walk of life show up. You know, not everybody agreed, and not everybody was on the same page as far as faith goes, but we were in the ballpark, as they say, and we were all in agreement that defacing and spreading hate to one another and to each faith as they're trying to practice in peace is unacceptable.
Right.
And it really brought so many people together in our community. You know, you wish you could keep that. It's sad that tragedy is what brings, and moments of hatred is what brings people together. It shows us the possibilities of what different groups can do if they choose to.
Right. And so we also had an experience here where there were threats made against the local mosque. Yep. And Christians from all over the community came out to stand around the mosque during prayer times to protect the mosque from violence. You know, that's what we should be doing, because that helps promote peace and social cohesion, as well as strengthening the community. It builds bridges between people and between communities of people. You probably see that a lot in Florida, don't you, Father Matt?
Absolutely. Our area is a predominantly Jewish area, but it wasn't always that way. And to this day, Jewish hate crimes are still averaging about 63% of the hate crimes in the area.
Wow.
So there's a lot of work to be done. And the best work that can go into that is communities of differing faiths, whether part of the Abrahamic family or not, coming together and supporting one another to help end anti-Semitism in our area.
Right. And of course, a good example of that also is like the flooding in Texas, Bishop Ben, where you know, people came out from all different faith communities to help search for the missing from, you know, the camp just recently that
right.
Was flooded. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Sure. And, you know, it was good that we had the faith leaders come out and help and other religions to come out and help. But what was mostly disturbing for me was the local government was not there to help. Like, Governor Abbott wasn't there to help anything. In fact, he was making... Instead of helping, he was making comments and having the red rescuers from Mexico deported and right. Confiscating the rescue equipment in the middle of a rescue. You know, how is that cohesion in the community? It right. Isn't. But yes, but on that same token, we did have a lot of help with that multi-faith communities come out and help us, which was good. It was good to see that.
I know that as an amateur radio operator, I've worked with what's called Saturn, which is the Salvation Army Radio Amateur Network.
Right.
and Saturn goes around with the Salvation Army's disaster relief team and helps with communications in disaster zones. And in Saturn, you have people of all different faiths coming together to work together. I've worked alongside, you know, Baptists, Buddhists, Hindus, you know, even Satanists, you know, who are just there to help their community, to make their community a better place and provide disaster relief when necessary. And so, you know, when we can come together and discuss these types of divides in a respectful way, we can really help build up our communities and make our communities a better place for everybody. And I've also learned a tremendous amount from other faith communities. One of my friends from the PRC years ago, Robert Clinton, who is a rabbi emeritus of Congregation Beth Israel here in Augusta, Georgia, he taught me a lot over the years about things that you don't even learn in seminary about Judaism, you know. Of course, the things we don't learn in seminary could fill a book, but, you know, that's another matter entirely. So, we were able to sit down and have, you know, respectful discussions and dialogue where he was able to teach me things that, you know, I didn't know.
Yeah, and I think if anything for the Christian faith, being able to have dialogue with our Jewish friends, brothers and sisters, should show us the importance of interfaith dialogue, because, you know, our faith rooted in the Jewish culture and their beliefs. And so it's so important to have people back up, because one thing that having that dialogue is, it lets me know where I'm at with my faith. Mm-hmm. It lets me know where I am in my belief, because if I'm secure in not everything, but in most things that I believe, I have no problem sitting down and talking to somebody who may be vastly different than I.
Right.
But we're taught in Scripture that God can use anything to point us in the direction of the divine, whether it's a person. There was that donkey one time. I mean, there's so many different things that God can point us in the direction. And maybe we're inspired by someone's dedication to their particular faith. Maybe a practice of meditation, or how they pray, or how they do something, or just their approach can inspire us to reach deeper and right. to go further, you know, because many people in my tradition raised, they're of the fact that, you know, they know it all and they've got it all and we have the right. true answers. And,
right.
You know, we see people of other faiths that pray on the regular more than we do.
Right.
And you're going, oh, wait a minute. If we believe we're serving the one true God and we believe we've got it right, then where's our dedication? Where is mm-hmm. Where is our desire to learn more and to be more like our faith and the one we follow? So I think it's vital that we have dialogue. It doesn't mean that I'm going to go change traditions or faiths, but again, you know, Bishop said it earlier, it's about community. Mm-hmm. And I believe that another part of it, you know, a secondary thing to look at is we're inspired.
Right.
We're inspired by our friends and their dedication.
Absolutely. Which leads me to my next question, and that is, will dialogue water down my faith? Is agreement required? And I think you touched that just now very well, actually. Dialogue doesn't water our faith down. it actually can build up and strengthen our faith in the divine. You know, and as Reverend Mark well put it here, that, you know, it can bring us closer to the divine, make us stronger in our faith and our by understanding other people's faiths. An agreement with them is not required. What do you think, Father Matt?
I 100% agree with that sentiment and statement. I had a hard time when I moved back to Florida finding a spiritual director, and I consulted the National Spiritual Director database, and the one that I could find that met my schedule was somebody who was a practicing Buddhist. And I said, well, I'll meet with them a couple times, give it a whirl, see how it works.
Right.
And to my great surprise, we were able to sit down and dialogue about each other's spiritual practices in a way that strengthened my own. We talked about meditation for hours one day. And a lot of what she had to teach me was very similar to Ignatian spiritual practices that I had already been practicing. So it allowed me to expand my own spiritual practices in a way that secured and deepened my faith in my own spiritual path. So these dialogues don't necessarily water down our faith. It can actually expand our faith in new horizons by adopting different prayer practices and that sort of thing.
And it's important to remember that interfaith dialogue is not about consensus, but rather it's about honest sharing and listening. And that sounds like what you've been able to do, Father Matt. I know personally, when I had my mental health issue in late 2020, my therapist that I first started seeing was a Buddhist in the local area. And he actually was able to help me through using techniques from his faith tradition to help me in managing my anxiety issues. And so if I had not gone to him for help, then I probably would not be where I am today, because it's not necessarily something that a therapist would normally pull into is, you know, meditation from a Buddhist perspective to help with anxiety. So, yeah. Some of the barriers to this discussion is a couple of different things. One is the language we use. We have, especially in the Christian faith, and to some degree in the Muslim faith, and probably Judaism too, to a certain degree, we have a set of language that we use when discussing spiritual ideas, theological ideas, and sometimes that language is a barrier in and of itself. Two reasons, I think, primarily. One being that it's inside baseball. You know, we would understand it. Maybe another Baptist or another Catholic or another Lutheran might understand it, but someone outside of those faith traditions might not fully understand or comprehend what we're talking about. And the other is that our language is off-putting when we have had it drilled into us so much that everyone else is going to hell except for us. Then we tend to approach dialogue in a way that we utilize phrases and we utilize ideas that end up putting off the other person, making them feel inferior, as though we don't truly respect them.
Yeah, because in our Christian faith, you know, the motivator is you're going to suffer forever.
Right.
Whereas Christ came to point us in the direction of a way to live,
right,
not how to die and be fair, to be scared of death. And I've had issue with it for years. You know, I've not led into preaching hellfire and brimstone, as they used to call it in the faith. And so Christ was leaning us into and leading us into a lifestyle,
right,
that reflected, versus, you know, oh, I need to keep myself and know that I need to be perfect so that I don't burn forever, as opposed to, I want my life forever to look like God.
Right.
I want my life forever, both now and, if, you know, I believe in an eternity, and in an eternity, I want it to look like God.
Right.
And so I think because we have so leaned into, you know, let's beat him over the head with one, you know, a negative, that we don't know how to just function in a world by basic kindness, empathy, and compassion. And that translates over into us talking on spiritual terms. And we can't step, you know, first off, we, you know, since we're convinced we have all the answers,
right,
we lead with, you know, bombarding people with, you know, well, you're a sinner, you're going to hell, or you're, you know, you need Jesus, and all the stuff, and not realizing that we need to locate people first. We need to know where people are coming from. Are they open to discussion, or are we just here to listen? All that stuff. And yeah, Christians do a terrible job at just talking normal to other people, because, you know, we got to praise the Lord this and bless that, and, you know, thank God. And I mean, I'm not saying that any of that's wrong, but if that's 24/7 out your mouth and people don't understand, you're just off-putting. It doesn't mean we have to. The goodness, the love, and the compassion should be enough to draw people.
Right.
Say, all right, there's something different about Bishop. There's something different about Father Matt, Bishop Ben. There's something different. That guy Mark, he's a little odd, but there's something different.
Right.
Our faith should have something different. And I've seen people that are far more kind, and my upbringing would classify them as absolute heathens.
Right.
Far more kind than Christians is what I should say.
Right. Well, and we also have to take into consideration the historic wounds that have been caused by religions against each other.
Right.
You know, speaking from my own tradition, Catholicism as a whole, all 40 branches of Catholicism, we had this period of time where in our liturgies, every Good Friday, we prayed for the nefarious Jews. That was the wording they used, nefarious Jews, every Good Friday. And I finally took it out after Vatican II, and the old Catholic tradition removed it way back. But you know, it remained in Catholicism up until the 70s. You know, up until the 70s, and the majority of Catholicism, that remained a part of their liturgy. And so, you know, that creates a great historic wound, doesn't it, Father Matt?
It absolutely does. And when you think about it, that particular part of the liturgy dates back to the Crusades and even further.
Right.
Where not only were you having those attacks that led to anti-Semitic mindsets, but you had Catholics attacking other Christians simply because they weren't part of their particular branch of Christianity. So I'm thankful for the emerging dialogues that have come up, especially in the past 20 years, where we're starting to take out some of the technical jargon that causes division and try to knit a more connected fabric of not only our faith, but to other faiths as well, that would have sown division versus gathering people in.
Right. And one of the other things that's a barrier to this interfaith dialogue that we need to be having is misinformation. I know that gets used a lot in today's society, especially by certain members of, in politics who are constantly yelling fake news, but there is a significant amount of misinformation about other faiths out there. And Bishop Ben and I can give you a list of examples just from being on TikTok of the amount of misinformation about religions. I want to point out one of them in particular, and Bishop, I'll let you comment. But one of the instances that we get a lot is this idea that Allah is a demonic god, that Allah is an evil spirit, not God. Well, the problem herein lies that Allah is literally the word God in Arabic. It is literally the word God in Arabic. So Syriac Orthodox Christians, even Baptists in the Middle East, in Arabic-speaking countries, are going to praise God by saying Allah Akbar. You know, God is great. So the idea that Allah is this demonic God is misinformation. It's a lie. It's just not true. Bishop Ben, can you think of any other examples from our experiences of misinformation?
Oh, yeah, quite. We get people that come in on a regular basis, especially after the during the Q&As. Oh, well, you're a child person, you know, a child lover.
Child predator, yes.
Yeah, and the thing is, they misconstrue that with that we're all the same as the Roman Church. And I agree, yes, the Roman Church has committed some very bad atrocities. And how do we undo that? I don't know. But they assume that we're all the same. So right. we get that question, or we get the people that come in with the disembodied Bible verses and et cetera, all the time.
Right. They take things out of context. Favorite.
Right.
Go ahead, Father Matt.
My favorite one that I run into a lot is, oh, you statue worshipers.
Right, right.
Because we're venerating, you know, saints. We're, you know, suddenly, you know, going against the commandment against idolatry because we're venerating a saint and asking them to intercede for us.
Right.
But which is a big difference from saying, oh, I'm going to give you a sacrificial offering and worship you as a god.
Right.
My favorite is a Mary worshiper.
Right, right. Or because I mention Maximilian Kolbe or Michael right. Judge or somebody that holds some kind of meaning in my life and my liturgies, suddenly, oh my God, I've elevated them to the status of God. No.
Right.
You're recognizing them as an important person of faith that has power to help you out in this realm because they've been confirmed to be with God.
Right.
So it trying to explain that to people that don't have that kind of language and understanding can be difficult, but once they grasp it, they can go, oh, well, that's no different than me wishing that Grandma so-and-so is up in heaven today looking down on me.
Right.
So it's, you know, so once you can relate to people in those terms, it becomes easier.
Very true. Very true. Did you have something to add, Reverend Moore?
No, I mean, I just, my tradition would do the same thing where we wouldn't have statues of saints or, you know, depictions of saints in our sanctuaries, but we would worship how we worshiped.
Right.
We put on an idol of the fact that, well, we have the gift of the Holy Spirit and therefore we are a notch above everybody else. And so our knowledge became our idol. and we worship that a lot, as opposed to worshiping, you know, the work that Christ gave us to do in the earth, as a form of worshiping to the divine.
Right.
We worshiped our knowledge. So there's many forms of idol worship out there that people in engage in.
So some of the ways that we can foster interfaith dialogue in our communities is start by listening. Be genuinely curious. I watch a lot of these videos on TikTok and Facebook. I've been getting a ton of them lately. There are these videos where these First Amendment auditors are out just standing on the sidewalk, filming everything around them, not hurting a soul, not getting into traffic, not, you know. And the number of people who come up and immediately start attacking them is appalling. They don't start with, hey, hi, how are you? You know, I was just curious what you're doing. No, it's always, I didn't give you permission. You're not allowed to do that. This is illegal. We, as people of faith, tend to do the same thing. Whenever we feel the slightest bit threatened in our faith or our religion, we shut down. And so if you genuinely want to learn, you have to listen, and listen with a genuine curiosity, not be there to debate and to argue, but be genuinely curious. Ask engaging questions about their beliefs and traditions and values. You'll find that most faith traditions have the same general faith belief structures, value systems that we do. And ask thoughtful, attend interfaith events and initiatives in your area. We talked about the MLK service. We also have the Interfaith Mental Health Service every year here in Augusta that is a rather large gathering of interfaith individuals. And the interesting thing about it is a lot of people, I think, when I say an interfaith mental health service, they think that we're there to pray the bipolar away. And that's not what it's about. It's a space where everyone can come together and share their experiences and find common ground, find camaraderie, find support in their struggle. And so I think that those types of events and initiatives are important. What are some other things that we can do to engage in interfaith dialogue, Reverend Mark?
Ooh, you hit a lot of them. Yeah, we often listen to respond and to know what we're getting ready to say,
right,
versus listening to comprehend, listening to embrace where that person's at. That's a huge part of it, because if we engage ourselves to and make ourselves slow down long enough with the people in the room, that's part of it, with the people in the room, then we'll realize, first, they're human beings and they're trying to just do the best that they can with where they are. Many people are in this position because that's where the way they were raised, but they're really just trying to reach for the best spiritual walk that they can embrace.
Right.
And, you know, obviously stepping back and reading and, you know, trying to figure out where people are before you are engaging in those individuals. But I love being surrounded by interfaith individuals. I love being surrounded by different leaders of various faiths, because it challenges me to reach deeper in my own. And be present with those people as much as you can. I'm sure you can find some place close to you, wherever that's at, to dive into some interfaith stuff, even if you have to drive a little bit for it. But it so inspires you, and it also tells you that you're not alone in the community trying to reach for some of the same things.
Right. Some of the same common values and core, such as compassion and justice and peace.
That's right.
You know, the CSRA Peace Alliance here in Augusta has Muslims, Jews, Baptists, Catholics, Lutherans, who all march together for one common goal, to end wars and to bring peace. And so it's those types of things that help us, build these interfaith dialogues and ultimately relationships. But relationships take time to build, don't they, Father Matt?
They do. It doesn't happen overnight by any means, but it's well worth the work. I think you told me Augusta did this several years ago, but Virginia Theological's also done this, where they have an interfaith library where you can literally check a faith out and go and talk to somebody and engage somebody of a different faith than yours, so that you can reach better understanding and better knowledge and see the core values that most align with you. As you said, you know, every religion out there has some kind of passage about compassion, about loving others as yourself,
right,
loving God as yourself. You know, it's the same concepts, just wrapped in a different package and a different way to worship. And I think that's important. And it's especially important when you're talking about getting together to form movements to demand social change. Your greatest strength is knowing what you have in common than knowing what your differences are.
Right. I agree. And it's important to remember that when building these relationships, to understand that all these things we've talked about, all these roadblocks, can still become a problem, even in that relationship building process. And so be patient, take your time, be willing to, you know, listen and work through these issues. I was going to share a couple of different resources that you can find that will help you with this interfaith dialogue, this journey. And one of them is My Neighbor's Faith, Stories of Interreligious Encounters, Growth, and Transformation by Jennifer Howell Peace. My Neighbor's Faith, Stories of Interreligious Encounter, Growth, and Transformation. It's a good book. If you'd like to read more about how you might have better interfaith dialogue with people around you. And the other one is The Interfaith Family Journal by Susan Katz Miller. The Interfaith Family Journal by Susan Katz Miller. And those can both be found on Amazon or your local bookstore if you'd like to participate in your local bookstore. All right. So what have we learned tonight? What are our key takeaways? Interfaith dialogue builds empathy, trust, and peace without requiring religious compromise. It challenges listeners to reach out to someone of another faith this week and begin a conversation with those people around you, those people of different faiths, and try to learn more from them. Reverend Mark, your final thoughts?
To me, it's important for us to reach out. I mean, how do we obey the commandments of Jesus and be involved in our community if we don't? And it doesn't mean that we have doubted what we believe by conversing with someone else or anything of that nature. It might just open up an opportunity for you to grow in your own faith, or realize you might be missing something. So I encourage you, if you have an opportunity where someone of a different faith or different belief system opens up and starts talking to you, just reserve in yourself that you're going to listen and see what the Spirit says to you in those moments.
Excellent. Great advice, Reverend Mark. Father Matt, your final thoughts?
My final thoughts on interfaith dialogue are just that be willing and open to have conversations with people you normally wouldn't have conversations with.
Sure.
You never know if you're open to them, you never know when these learning opportunities can come to you.
Right.
The old adage is you're not truly living unless you're learning something new. And the learning something new may be that you have a greater connection with somebody who is a Jainist or a Muslim or a Sikh than you ever thought that you might have had before, just simply by being an active listener and participating in an open-minded conversation.
Excellent. Thank you, Father Matt. And Bishop Ben, your final thoughts?
Well, you know, like Father Matt said, Reverend Mark, you know, I like to just parrot, you know, ask them not only to open your ears, but open your ears of your heart. Have that servant heart to listen. Have compassion. But just be there to listen and start a respectful dialogue. It costs nothing to be respectful and kind to people.
Excellent. Thank you, Bishop Ben. I want to thank everyone on our panel tonight for joining us and participating. It's been a wonderful podcast as usual. And next week, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to talk about faith and pop culture. So we get to talk about movies, television shows, music, books. Might even delve a little bit into sci-fi. So faith and pop culture next Saturday night. That'll be a fun episode for us for episode 5. I hope that you will continue to check us out online. Remember, you can always send us your comments or questions throughout the week on our Facebook page or on TikTok, where we are now there at Expanding Your Faith on TikTok. And we hope that you will join us next week when we once again attempt to expand your faith. Until then, keep shining bright, my friends. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/Expanding Your Faith. We are available on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.